Good morning. This morning my joke is actually coming from Sebastian. He told it to me yesterday and I thought it was worthy of the joke spot at my weekly stand-up. So, knock knock. Boo. You don't have to cry, it's just a joke. Oh yeah, classic, it's awesome. So you can all tell Sebastian that he came up with a good one. Or not. You can submit jokes to me too if you find any that are funnier than mine, which is hard to do, I know. So obviously, I am not Steve. Steve Trammell is supposed to be preaching to this morning, and he is sick, so we need to remember to pray for Steve. So we're not going to continue in our Abundant Grace series this week because I didn't have time to prepare for that series this week because he called me yesterday morning. And so we're going to do something a little different today. We're going to go back into the Old Testament and talk about a king named Xerxes. Everyone say that with me, Xerxes. Isn't that a fun name? It starts with an X, so next time you need an X name, you can go with Xerxes. Now, Xerxes was the king of Persia. And the king of Persia was a very proud man. He was a very pomp and circumstance. It's got to look good. It's got to sound good. He would throw parties that would make anyone excited to be there. In one case, he threw a party that lasted 180 days, so almost a half a year, for a party. And when that party finished, you know what he did next? He threw another party. Okay, he just kept having party after party after party. And at one of these parties, he wanted to, the queen, Queen Vashti, was also having a party, but hers was just for the ladies. And so he wanted to kind of show off his wealth and show off his beautiful queen. So he sent for Queen Vashti to come, so that he could show her off and show how beautiful she is to all of his invited guests. Well, the queen did not like this idea of being paraded around like some trophy. So she said no. Now, at that time, you don't say no to the king. Saying no to the king would result in death. And this made King Xerxes furious that anyone would have the gall to say no to him. And so he called together his noblemen and said, "What are we going to do about Queen Vashti? I really don't want to kill her, even though that's what the law requires, but what are we going to do?" So he said they came up with the solution to banish her from the kingdom and strip her from her royal title of queen. And so that's what they did. They banished her from Persia, and the king then was left alone. His servants noticed that he was kind of lonely and kind of getting depressed. The parties weren't quite as good as they used to be for him. So they decided, let's find you a new queen. That's what's going to solve it, because you know in life that when you're down and depressed, the solution is a woman, right? Or a man. And so they said, let's do this for you, and let's do this. Let's have a beauty pageant, right? Because who doesn't like a beauty pageant? Okay, so they decide this is their solution to the king's loneliness. And so they send word throughout the kingdom, throughout Persia, to send the most beautiful women you can find to this beauty pageant, is basically what it turned into. And so they came to a place and they got prepared to meet the king. Because you don't just waltz in. Okay, you've got to get prepared. And their preparation was 1 year preparation just to see him the first time. So the people, the girls that were brought to the place where they're getting prepared, were getting better food than most people in the kingdom. They were getting beauty treatments. They probably were not disenjoying their time there. It was probably nice getting pampered, those kind of things. But there was one girl who was a Jew, and her name was Esther. Now, Esther was an orphan, and so she was being raised by her cousin Mordecai. And the Jews were the outsiders at this time in Persia. And so he told Esther, don't reveal to anyone that you're a Jew, because it could put you in danger or take you out of the running. Now the guy who was in charge of this group of women who were in this pageant took a liking to Esther. And so he gave her a little bit extra attention, a little bit extra food, and really got her looking good. And so what would happen at the end of this year is that they would bring the girls one at a time to the king, And the king would basically thumbs up or thumbs down him. Okay? It was like a speed dating round. And so the king would bring they would bring the girl into the king, and the king would decide whether or not to have a conversation with her, whether to just dismiss her right away, or whatever it would be. They brought Esther in, and the king liked what he saw. And so he eventually decided that she would be the new queen. So he extended his scepter to her, which is what they had to do there to accept them. She touched the scepter, and she became queen. So they gave her new robes, and got a new place to live, and all the other girls were second runners-up. They had to go back to their homes. So Queen Esther now is the queen, and as she is the queen, Mordecai, her cousin, is still kind of in contact with her through this time. It was mostly through messengers. But what we find out is that two of the guards of the king really did not like the king. And so they plot to kill the king. But Mordecai overhears this plot, sends word to Esther, and Esther then sends word to the king, and the king is able to thwart the plans, and his life is spared because of Mordecai's willingness to share this information. Now, nothing happens at that point with Mordecai and the king. It just kind of goes, whew, I'm not dying today. So that's good, we move on. Okay. Now, there's another man that did get honored, however, and his name was Haman. Haman was honored so much in the kingdom that when you saw Haman, you were to bow down to him as if he were the king. Now, that was fine and dandy for a lot of people. They'd be like, who cares? They have lots of gods, lots of kings. And so they were fine doing that. One guy would not bow down to Haman, and that guy was Mordecai. Because Mordecai was a Jew. And who did the Jews worship and bow down to? Only God. Only Yahweh. So, he would not bow down to Haman, even though that was the law of the land. And this got Haman fired up. I mean, he was ticked off at Mordecai. And he was so mad at Mordecai that he decided not only was he going to kill Mordecai, but he was going to kill all of his people. All of the Jewish people were going to die because of Mordecai's insubordination, if you will, and not being willing to bow down to him. So, Haman goes to the king, and he said, King, there's this group of people living in your kingdom who are outsiders, and they're getting together to plan a revolt. Now, as king, he wants to party. He doesn't want a revolt happening. And so, his ego kind of gets flared up a little bit, and Haman knows exactly what to say to threaten him, in the sense of, if you don't do something, king, you're going to lose your kingdom. There's going to be revolt, there's going to be war, and the parties are going to come to an end. And so, the king agrees with Haman that the only way to get rid of this threat is to wipe out the Jewish people. Kill every single one of them. And so he issues a decree. And he sends out this letter. Haman is the one that writes the letter. And it gets sent out to all the people in the kingdom. And it says, on this specific day, you are to kill all of the Jewish people in your towns and villages. Every last one of them are to be killed. Now, the people, the Bible tells us, were surprised at this order. But none of them stood up to Haman, none of them stood up to the king, none of them did anything to stop it. They were just, all right, I guess they're getting killed. The Jews, on the other hand, were understandably upset. And so they turned to the one person that can help them, and that is Yahweh, that is God. So they prayed, and they fasted, and they mourned. They put on the black clothes. And the queen's servants saw that the Jewish people were mourning. And so they sent word back to Mordecai to find out, why are the Jewish people so upset? Why are they in mourning? Why are they crying? Why are they wearing the black? And Mordecai sends word to Queen Esther about what Haman's plan is. And so he says, what you need to do, Queen Esther, is go to the king King Xerxes, and get him to stop this plan, because all of our lives will be taken if you don't. She sends back, "Do you not know the law?" Because the law is, you cannot, even as his wife, she cannot just go strike up a conversation with him. You cannot go see the king unless you are invited by the king. And if you go in unannounced or uninvited, the king has that scepter again, and he will either lower his scepter so you can touch it and show a sign of respect, or you're done. You're killed for entering the king's area without his permission. And so she sent back, "Do you remember this law?" She says, "You need to pray and fast for me for 3 days so that God will protect me as I go into this place." And Mordecai's response to this letter is, "You know what? Maybe you were made queen for such a time as this. Maybe this is why God allowed all this to happen." And so that gives Queen Esther some motivation and some encouragement from Mordecai that maybe this is why I was made queen. Maybe it was to be able to save my people. So on the third day, after all of the fasting and the praying, the queen requests an audience with the king, and she goes in to the throne room. Now think about how she's feeling at this point. She's got a lot of pressure because the lives of all of her people are hanging on the balance of this one move to go into the throne room. She stands there before the king, not knowing if she's going to be killed, if he's going to even talk to her, if he's going to hear her request. She knows nothing. And just in that moment of not knowing what the king is going to do, imagine that flood of emotions that comes over her. After a moment or a minute or a couple of minutes, the king extends his scepter to his wife. And she can finally relax just a little bit, knowing that she's not going to die for this. She touches his scepter, and the king says, "What would you like, my queen? I will give you up to half of my kingdom." And she says what she would like to do is throw a party for him and for Haman that night. And so he says, "Great, party on." Oh, that just made me think of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Party on, dude. Okay, so you get the party. Okay, he's excited. Haman is through the roof excited. Because what do you think Haman's thinking? Like, there are two guests to this party. Haman and the king. I mean, he's feeling pretty good about himself at this point. So they go and they have this party. And the king, again, is so enamored with it. She's done just a great job. Maybe if she's not queen, she can be a party planner. Okay? And he says, "I will give you up to half of my kingdom. What would you like?" And she says, "I want to throw another dinner party for you and for Haman tomorrow night." Haman is feeling real good now. Because another night with just him and the king and the queen. So he goes back to his house and he's feeling good about himself. But who does he see as he's walking home? Mordecai. And what does Mordecai not do to him? Bow down. He just pops that balloon of a head that's coming up, his big head. He's so excited, and then just boom! He gets mad, he gets angry, he goes home, he can't even enjoy himself, he doesn't even want to talk to his family and his friends. He's just so angry. So they said, "You know what you need to do?" This is Haman's friends and family. They said, "You know what you need to do? Before the dinner party tomorrow, you just need to kill Mordecai. That way you can really enjoy the party." He's like, "That's a great idea." And so he has this gallows built to be able to hang Mordecai that is just astronomically big. And he's ready to hang him in the morning so that everyone can see what happens if you don't bow down to Haman. So that night, what Haman doesn't know is that the king couldn't sleep. And so what the king did was have the records of what had happened in office, the history of his kingdom, read to him so that he could help fall asleep. And so they read to him the passage about the two guards who wanted to kill him and Mordecai informing them of what's happening so that it saved his life. And he said, "What was ever done to Mordecai to honor him in this way?" And they said, "Nothing, Your Highness. Nothing was done to Mordecai." So he said, "We need to fix that." And so first thing in the morning, he calls Haman into his inner chamber there, his inner throne room, and says, "Haman, what should be done for a man that I want to honor?" And so who does Haman think he's talking about? Himself. He's like, "Well, King, if you really want to honor this man, you should give him a new robe, a new ring, and you know what you should also do? You should give him a crown and then put him on the king's horse and have parade him around town, honoring him as the man of the hour." And the king said, "You know what? You are absolutely right. That is exactly what you're going to do for Mordecai." What? So the king has given him this directive, and so Mordecai is going to be honored by Haman, the man he hates, by the man Haman hates here. And so Haman has to go get Mordecai, put on a new robe for him, give him a ring and a crown, and put him on the horse, and proclaim, "This is the man that the king honors," while he's walking him around town. Can you imagine what is going on in this man's head at this point? He is humiliated, and he is angry, and he is even more determined that he wants to kill him. But how can he kill him now that he's been honored by the king? He can't at this point. He has to wait. So the end of the day, and I, in my own mind, like to imagine that this was an all-day affair, with him shouting about how great Mordecai is. And maybe that's just because I think that'd be cooler for Mordecai. But he goes to the party, because he still has this party to go to, with just the king and Queen Esther. And so the king says to the queen again, "What would you like, my queen?" And she says, "King, I want you to spare the lives of my people and spare my life as well." Now the king gets angry at this point. Who would dare kill the queen and her people? And she said, "That man, Haman." Now what do you think Haman's feeling? How good is he feeling now? Haman is stunned at this, because he didn't know that the queen was a Jew. He's scared, and he's angry. But he didn't have a lot of time to feel those emotions, because the king said, "This will not happen. No one is going to kill my queen and her people." And so he ordered Haman to be killed. Now, in a fitting sense of irony, one of the servants says, "Hey, King, just so you know, he built this really high gallows that he was going to hang Mordecai on. And just letting you know, FYI, that's available today. It's looked on the schedule, and it's free." And so the king says, "Fantastic." He hung Haman on the gallows that Haman built for Mordecai. In addition, he sent out a new proclamation that said, "The Jews will not be killed. And the Jews, if someone attacks you and you are of Jewish origin, you have the right to defend yourself against that attacker." The Jews today still celebrate this deliverance from God. this deliverance of Esther obeying God and obeying the ways of Mordecai. They call it Purim. And they give gifts to each other and they celebrate the fact that through Queen Esther's obedience and courage, the Jewish people were saved. Now Esther was not in a good situation. She was in a minority people in a land with prejudice running amok. Yet God put her in that horrible situation for a reason. And the question that Mordecai asked her is, maybe this is why you are queen. Maybe you are queen for such a time as this. You may be in a situation now that is not great. It might be a bad situation. It might be a terrible situation. You may not see any hope out of the situation that you're in right now. But what we learn through this story is that no matter how bad it is now, God is still in control. And God has a plan. And God is going to see you through this. God will see you through this. And on the other side of whatever this tragedy or this situation is, you're going to be able to look back and say, maybe it was for such a time as this that I went through that. And that's the promise that God gives all of us. That He's never going to leave us. He's never going to forsake us. He's never going to give us more than as a community we can come together and handle. We need to be encouraged by Esther's story and know that there is hope and there is a tomorrow. And that even if we don't see it, God is still there and is still going to be guiding us through when we follow Him. We put our faith and trust not in a king, not in ourselves, but in Yahweh, in God, our Heavenly Father. Will you pray with me? God, I thank You for the story of Esther. I thank You that You have given us this story as an example of how when things get rough, God, You don't turn away. But You meet us there. And through our obedience, God, You see us through to the other side. I pray, Father, that if there are those here today that do not yet know You, that they will know of Your love, know of Your grace, know of Your kindness, and that they will turn to You in their hour of need. God, You know the things that we're going through. You know the things that are happening in each person's life here today. And we take comfort in the fact knowing that You will never leave us, that You love us, that You care for us, that You've given us grace beyond anything that we deserve. We thank You for that. And we thank You for giving us the gift of Your Son, our Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen.
You've been listening to Pastor Kevin Daniels at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep these podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the donate button. Or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111, Hayes, Kansas 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.